Okay, so I was just wondering if there were any questions or observations tonight about the practices. Yes, Richard.
It's not a question or an observation, but I never was trained before either. So
you what?
I was never trained before. I never had this training before.
Oh, okay.
So, thank you.
Good. Yeah.
So it's all new to you.
We try to give when people come, if they haven't had meditation instructions before, even if they have, we normally give them about 20 minutes of instruction, and that is never anywhere near enough. You know, it's just a way to sort of be able to come and sit down and learn how to sit still and just pretend like you're meditating, I guess. Yeah, on some level.
Which we're all doing.
But we're still doing that. But at the same time, that's why it's good to have follow-up, because we try to have an hour of meditation in general before we have our classes. And this is an opportunity. Obviously, an hour every day could be rather a steep requirement for people who particularly either don't have the time because of their schedule or just find it daunting. And, you know, so we really suggest if you can do 10 to 15 minutes a day, but actually trying it as a regular daily practice rather than if you just do something at the end of the week or something, it's not quite the same because there's no continuity. You know, it's just like we have this big moment of meditation and then we go back to just letting our mind crank away, you know, our life crank away.
The usual slog.
Yeah, well, it can be that, or you know, you just get swept away with all the stuff happening, and like Dante says, one day in the middle of my life, I entered this dark forest, you know, not knowing how I got here, and I got to go through this descent, right? So this equips us for those kind of experiences, and makes it actually a worthy project. If we find ourselves having to do that. But the meditation practice actually allows us to learn who we are and understand the nature of our mind. Now, it's not meditation alone. In this, the way we're working here is we employ teachings, Dharma teachings, which are basically coming from the Buddha, the historical Buddha, and that have been evolved and elaborated on and developed over millennia, 2,500 years plus, by many people who have given a great deal of their time to understand the nature of their mind and have been kind enough to share the realization with us. So we have teachings and which we use to learn and contemplate and then to meditate. And these are keys to basically being able to be the pioneers of our own world, where we actually are, you know, breaking into what's ultimately virgin territory. Always virginal. Always fresh. And that's what we can discover through our practice.
I have a question about the word gap and also how it works. It seems to me that breathing is so automatic at this age, mm-hmm. that to try to focus on it just not there not being a gap. So is it a gap that occurs between the breathing, or is it a gap intellectually?
Well, I don't know if you... Did you attend Khandra Rinpoche's teachings?
Yes.
2 years ago. Yeah, she gave some really remarkable teachings over the last couple of years, and one of them, 2 years ago, she talked about a topic where she says, Buddha without breath. And I thought that was it was just an aphorism, you know, just as a kind of a way to sort of understand, a springboard for understanding, and which in itself contains the essence of nature of Buddha mind or our own basic inner truth, the reality of our genuine being, which is Buddhahood. And so it's beyond just the breath, which is something we can label, we can identify, we can call it, and we can experience it as something. What we're learning about in our meditation practice is to no longer reify our experience. Reify, the word reify means to turn our anything into a thing. You're thingifying. You know, you're making a thing. You're solidifying. And what we discover with our practice is fundamentally that underneath all of this appearance, or even inside the appearance itself, is just openness. It's openness. It's completely open and it's completely spacious. So that space, and space is, in a sense, beyond the reach of our, what we call mind, you know, our thinking mind, our grasping mind. And so what we're learning through our practice is to introduce ourselves to space as not just some vacuum or some kind of just dead zone, but actually openness, which is very alive. Now, the word we have used in Buddhism for this is emptiness. But emptiness in English really does not do much justice to reality of what this is. It is the basic reality of things as they are, which is beyond simply our description or other people's descriptions of it, because those are all concepts. It's much more direct, it's much more intimate, and it's much more real. So gap is an introduction to space. It's just something that is like between, you could say, at least as an introduction. We have this word bardo we've talked about occasionally. It's just this sort of little gap between one thing and the next, and we're sort of opening ourselves up to that. It's like then we begin to discover that there is some space between our thoughts. So instead of just one thought chain linked to the next, to the next, to the next, ad infinitum, there's actually room around, through, and encircling or encompassing our thoughts, which our thoughts are just little fragments, like, you know, floating around, right?
I found much more spaciousness this evening with this guided meditation, which is why I felt like, oh God, I can't believe I'm not recording it. You know, it just was.
Now you've got to remember it, right?
Oh my God, no, not again. But you know, it was just extremely helpful. It was just something about the pace of it, or you know, sometimes the guided meditation is more helpful by myself, and I can do the counting and not get anywhere near 10. You know, so I mean, I used to when I went to the Zen Center, you know, 30 years ago, I wouldn't get past 2. Really. I was like, so, and I'm just wondering how other people felt tonight about, you know, during this meditation compared, you know, maybe other times you've sat or sit by yourself. I don't know. Anyone have a.
I have a couple of I had a couple of interesting experiences. One was I thought it was really helpful to, and I hadn't experienced or maybe heard this, but not remembered that I heard it, to let your thoughts, just go with the, go down with the, well, I was,
with
that
the
was
breath.
My word, with through the breath. I was
uh-huh.
thinking of,
yeah.
Like going down a slide almost. Like,
yeah.
And then I did find a gap because when I was thinking about the thought going out and down, it just kind of disappeared. And then I was thinking, oh, where's the thought begin and where's the thought end? And then it's like, whoa, then I started really drifting. Like, okay, come back. but that was it was interesting. Yeah, it was interesting. And then the other thing, the count, it's like, I think I was on 8, but maybe I'm on 10. Maybe I never got past 2.
Well, maybe 20 is too much to think about starting with. Maybe just 10. You know, I'm going to do 10 breaths, and, you know, I can even, like, use my fingers to keep track of where I am. It's okay. I mean, whatever we need, any kind of aid will work, and then go backwards from 10. So that keeps us present, you know, so we don't get lost because our mind has a tendency to wander. We have this thing, lifelong tendency to just go with whatever comes in. But here we're actually training our mind to actually be more steady and present. And the point of this is not so we can get up to 1,000 and backwards. It's more about just actually being here. And when we think about being here, we're not like being here like I'm not going to move, you know. It's about actually just returning, continually returning. So, okay, thought, fine. I get the thoughts. I get 10 thoughts. I get 4 minutes of thoughts. Where have I been? You know, I mean, it's like, ah! And then I'm just coming back. I'm returning to here, just coming back to here. That's part of this friendly quality we have towards ourselves, so we can actually deal with the actual recognition that our minds are all over the place. And, you know, by being friendly toward those, then it's okay. You know, it's not like I have to beat my breast because I see how distracted I am all the time. It's more, I just see it, and I'm willing to say, okay, if I'm friends with myself, I have to be, if I'm going to get along with myself, otherwise I'm in deep trouble. We all are, you know. Then, you know, okay, then just, you know, let it be, relax, and then I'm back here. So we're returning. We're just constantly returning to being here. And then being here is not like some, oh, same place I was. What? Were you here 5 minutes ago? No. It's always different. Every moment is different. Every second, every single moment of simply being here is open and fresh. That's the whole thing.
So I have one suggestion. I actually, in the morning before I do my meditation, I have a series of exercises one of my Ralphing practitioner gave me, and they're like, I don't enjoy them. They're hard stretches. And I'm supposed to do like 10 of each on each side. So I'm like, one. And I realized when I counted, I like got my mind thinking, because I'm like, oh, I'm saying a number in my head. I'm saying another number. And then suddenly I was thinking about something totally different. And I'm like, whoa, what number am I? And I was like, I really don't want to do extras, but I don't want to not do enough. And, well, because I know they're hard. They're not fun. They're not like, you know, some exercise. And then I actually switched, and I, just because some stuff I'd been reading about using your fingers to count, that actually your brain does that anyway, was to just do it with my fingers, and then my mind gets less stimulated. So the like counting the numbers starts your brain thinking like, I'm counting numbers, I have to keep track of this number, I have to know which number it is. But if you just start like moving your hand, you know, like, one, like put the fingers out, 1, 2, particularly with counting breath.
And then you can look where you are, you don't have to think about it.
Well, actually, but like my brain knows, like it feels it, and it kind of half, it's half thinking the number, but it's not like now I have to remember this is 5, remember this is 5. And then you're like, do you remember you were supposed to do this? Do you remember? And your brain is just gone.
And the numbers, you know, like 1, 2, 3 is good, 4, I'm going to fall off after that. And then between like 5, 6, 7 and 8, or 5, 6, I mean, it's really hard to get that middle.
So just go to 5 and backwards, 8, and do that a few times. But don't start this run. I think first of all, just let your mind settle into your body. Before you start any of this, make sure you're simply here. Now, you've been studying, we had a class that just ended last week. I don't know, did you attend any of those with Jim Rosen? So he went through these various stages of relaxation, the relaxed mind. And if there are any questions about that, you know, you feel free to bring it up now. At least we have a few minutes to discuss it. But the idea somehow is first you just get into a state of relaxation and ease before you try to do anything else. So, like, counting to 5 or 10 is a project. Okay, we admit that. But it's a project. It's just a temporary project. It's like, I don't want to do this the whole time. I just want to make sure I'm staying with being here. That's all. And then when I see I can go to 5 and backwards, fine. That's enough. I don't have to turn it into an athletic process, you know, or something. So just keep it simple.
No, it does help. I mean, I've done it, you know. Many times.
Good.
You know, especially when I'm like wild.
Yeah.
My mind is, you know, I have to count. If I don't, I go forward to 10. I'm not going backwards, but
I have a question before I forget it. So when you said that, so you want to be where you are, you want to be there, you know, back in, and it's always different, it's always fresh. So that's interesting. So it means that if we're feeling bored, then you're not really there, right? Because if you're bored, then it's kind of like, I think if you're really attending to whatever, you know, is...
Well, there's different kinds of boredom. Trungpa Rinpoche talked about different kinds of boredom. He talked about hot boredom, which is this kind of claustrophobia. I just got to escape this mind thing. I mean, you know, my thoughts are killing me kind of thing. You know, it's like, this is nuts.
Let me out of here.
I'm just getting... people have gotten up, you know, in the middle of meditation, like one of these interns, 3 hours, just bolt. You know, leave. That's the end of it. I can't handle it.
Panic than boredom.
Yeah, but no, it is a point of panic. Hot boredom is like more of a state of just being extremely claustrophobic.
Okay, how about the other kind?
Cool boredom.
Yeah, how about cool
is a willingness to put up with and recognize, because things are blah and just basically there, doesn't mean that's a problem. But once you relax into that, then actually it gets interesting. It's no longer like just endless playing with, you know, nothing there. There's always little bumps coming up and, you know, rivulets and all kinds of other things. The sky keeps just shifting slightly, you know. Everything is constantly, if you think about during the daytime, the quality of light, it's constantly changing if you're just willing to slow down. And if you're slowing down with using your breath, for instance, as a support to start with, then you begin to see how there's some room here. And not only that, it feels good. You know, I mean, it just feels good, meaning maybe we start with just, it's okay. You know, I'm just here, neutral. That's fine. As we open more and more to this simplicity of being here, it actually gets more interesting.
It really does feel good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something just sort of delightful about sitting sometimes.
Well, you're being...
Yeah.
And what it means is being.
You're allowing something to happen.
That's right. You're letting be what really is. And actually being is good. You know, it's not like we're not supposed to be here. This is a mistake. I got to figure out how I'm going to get out of this world. You know, there's got to be a better one. I mean, this
like
is
like in the walking meditation. I don't think I'd ever heard it put that way. It's just, you are walking. I mean, it was like... You are the walking.
Your mind is the walking. It's just
right,
moving.
Right, your mind is the walking.
Yeah.
So your mind
is just in your body walking, and it's all moving just as it is. And it's just so simple.
Well, I think what feels good about it is there's actually no pressure, because there's no
simple
outcome.
Simplicity.
So there's no demand.
Yeah. There you go. We don't want. The thing is, what we're going to discover is expectations all the time. We think we're supposed to get something out of this. I'm supposed to feel better. You know, I'm supposed to be better than I feel like today. Jesus Christ, you know. And, you know, all of this kind of stuff is just like disappointment, because we thought we were going to get something out of it. Well, we're not going to get anything out of it. And if we just are willing to surrender to just being here, which is actually not easy, I understand that. Like, then, you know, it's okay. This is part of the process. Part of the process is just to actually be where we are with it and give ourselves to it. That's all.
Sometimes I like the kind of a walking meditation combined with the, you know, the regular meditation. Because I find that at home, sometimes I can do like maybe 20 minutes by sitting on the cushions on the rug, and then if I go out for a walk, it's a walking meditation or something. I've been running for years. It's just I have to be careful now, you know, not tripping over the sidewalk. But I find that, you know, the combination works for me.
It does.
You know,
and it's meant to complement.
Yeah,
meant to complement. So anytime you go for a walk, you can just turn it momentarily into a meditation. Just, you know, we're walking around doing things, but I mean, we just put our heel and our foot on the floor, and we're just basically moving, ambulating, and basically just being there. It's an easy way to stay simple, even if it's just momentary.
Yeah. So it works, you know, because I'm trying to, I'm meditating as I'm walking, not, you know, looking around. I'm trying to go to a place where I don't have to look around the cars. And,
yeah.
So I do swimming meditation. When I swim, I try to do the same thing. I mean, I kind of
good.
Yeah, I do that too. I just try to stay in my body.
What's that?
I just try to stay in my body when I'm swimming. Just the stroke, just the water.
I do, and I concentrate on the breath. I suppose you could do the stroke would be similar to concentrating on the stroke would be similar to when walking, meditating, walking where you're kind of the footfalls, stuff like that. Yeah, it's definitely much like rather than the usual of mind wandering, looking at the other swimmers, whatever else is going on.
Yeah. Did you have any questions about the class that we just ended? Were there any lingering questions or anything?
No. I mean, just what I asked already. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the point is, and it always helps to, we can, important to share our kind of experiences with each other. You know, part of what we find out about being in a Sangha is we're here for each other. We're here to help each other. We're here to allow each other to speak and say what we need to say and share what we need to share, even though it could be sometimes embarrassing, at least it seems embarrassing until you realize it's just out there. No big deal. Don't worry, you don't have to keep this recorded.
No, I think it's good.
I think another piece of being with other people is this other song I go to sometimes. They talk about, you know, they've done studies that if you're sitting and you're sort of, you're feeling compassionate, like it's actual a physical feeling that the people around you perceive. And so you can sometimes feel it from other people. So you can come in a space where you're like, today was not a good day. I'm not feeling good about a lot of different things I've done. And you can sit and feel that, you know, actual energy from other people. And it's like very powerful. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of when I hadn't been here for a few weeks and I came in the summer, I was like, oh, I forgot how powerful it is to be here with these people.
I was thinking that, I was just feeling really crummy today, and I think partly why the meditation was so helpful was because I came and Muffy had said something really kind to me that was so, you know, helpful, and I was like, oh, wow, I'm sort of forgiven, you know, for all this awful stuff. And then, you know, the meditation was just such a nice even pace, and it was such a nice basic instruction, you know, because it never hurts to be reminded of all of that.
I think it's kind of like what a lot of religions talk about, being in community. And it's, I mean, it's come with many religions, the idea of being, having a group support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, that part of what holds a community together is some kind of common ground that people are willing to share and find joy in, or some fellowship in. And I think that this is really important, particularly in terms of being on the path of Dharma. This is, you know, we have this thing called solitary practitioners, but these people are not people we necessarily want to emulate. I mean, they're just there for their own good. They only care about feeling good about themselves and screw the world, you know.
Like monks or something?
No, well, we have, you know...
The ones in caves.
They could be in caves, but that isn't necessarily... It's more that they're just basically trying to be happy. And they're not really interested in other people's happiness. They're not interested in sharing their happiness. They just... It's more fundamentally for themselves. And, you know, it's very limited in terms of what they can actually get to in terms of actually understanding the nature of their own mind. Because one of the things we actually begin to discover is a sense of oneness or a unity we have and we share with, first of all, each other as humans, and then other creatures, you know, sentient beings. Everybody has this fundamental nature, Buddha nature, of which is just basically awareness. It's fundamental awareness. Awareness is so difficult to understand, because we just block it all the time with our senses and with our thinking process. But so the space that we encounter with meditation is where we get introduced to this. It's just an entire basis for everything.
I'm thinking of the space between us is always what's sacred to me. I mean, I used to, you know, talk to people about, do you believe in God, you don't believe in God, or they would talk to me or something. I said, I don't know what I believe in. I just know we're all connected. Hmm. You know, and that's what seems sacred is the connection, you know, between all beings, and grass and the rocks.